Well, season's greetings, everybody. Welcome into the Going Nuclear podcast with myself, Trevor Hall, and the uranium insider himself, Mr. Justin Hune. Justin, season's greetings. How are you, my friend?
Hey, season's greetings to you, too. The politically correct way to acknowledge the time of year.
Happy Hanukkah, yeah. Merry Christmas, all those things.
Kwanzaa, don't forget Kwanzaa. Let's get Kwanzaa, it all in there.
Pardon me. You know, it's been a little while since you and I were able to record one of these things. Just, you and I were both on the road for a couple of weeks over November and early December. So we're finally getting back to this. We're going to wrap up the year. Before we kind of jump into this conversation, I do just want to say thank you for joining me on this endeavor with the Clear Commodity Network to launch the Going Nuclear podcast. You know, you and I have had these conversations for a number of years. So we just, you know, until this year decided to, at the beginning of this year, decided to do our own thing with Going Nuclear. And I think it's been a lot of fun. So I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thank you to you as well, Trevor. And I think our timing couldn't have been better. It's really, I mean, we've seen, since you and I have been speaking, we've seen a complete sea change for nuclear. And I couldn't be happier to see it, not only just, you know, applauding for my portfolio, but of course, applauding just for the sake of the benefit of humanity. To see nuclear expanding is, in my opinion, crucial, really, for multiple reasons. And it really, you know, there's, we can talk about a little bit more about the nuclear fuel cycle and the uranium investment side of things, because that is also set up in a way that I have never seen. And industry execs that I speak to all the time, they have never seen, who have been in the nuclear industry for longer than I've been alive. Are like, the supply is a problem here. So what I'm seeing for 2024 looks very, very constructive. So happy to be doing this with you again.
I wish the timing with my investment portfolio this year was just as good as launching the podcast content, but unfortunately I can't really say that much. Can't say that very well. Hey, there's a number of news items. Listen, no guests, no interview guests this week. We're just going to keep it between you and I, but there's no shortage of things to talk about. Like I said, every time you and I chat, there's a lot of news items that we could cover. I think we got to talk about the big news, at least this week, is a U.S. ban of imported Russian uranium. That's really been kind of the headline news out of the nuclear energy news items this week. You know, give us a sense of what you're seeing, Justin, and why is this all of a sudden in front of everybody we're seeing during the holiday season before everybody heads home for the holidays?
Well, so, I mean, this really stretches back multiple years. Without going super deep into a long history, the Russians have been a major supplier of uranium into the market for decades. The Megatons and Megawatts program was a downblending of Russian material that was sold into the market. The Russians still do a little bit of government stockpile downblending that is sold into the market. The Russians expanded enrichment to a great degree over the past couple of decades, to the point where they had more enrichment than any other single country, which allowed them to underfeed, basically oversupply the market with secondary supply. That happened for decades. They've been a reliable supplier. Utilities, generally speaking, up until recently, love doing business with the Russians because you can make one phone call and get your uranium, your conversion, your enrichment, your fuel fabrication, and you can get it on time. You can get it cheaper than pretty much anybody else. And so it's been a boon for the industry to have this Russian supply. Since the invasion of Ukraine, it is really, no, hold on, I'm skipping a step. And we should go back to 2018 Section 232 petition that was filed by Energy Fuels and UR Energy. This was a petition that was asking the Department of Commerce, I believe it was, to basically mandate that the United States nuclear utilities would have to buy 25% of their needs from U.S. Domestic miners, of course, to support the U-308 mining industry in the United States. This petition was ultimately denied by President Trump's administration. He did, however, do a follow-up nuclear fuels working group to basically say, hey, you know what? I don't think what you're asking for is the right way to approach this, but let's look into this. I see your point. This is a problem. What's the problem? The United States is the largest supplier of nuclear energy in the world for on a countrywide basis. We have something like, off the top of my head, 93 gigawatts or something like that of nuclear. It consumes about 45 million pounds of uranium on an annual basis, yet we produce almost nothing. I think year to date, we've produced less than 200,000 pounds of uranium, and we consume 45 million pounds. And we don't have our own enrichment. Yes, Urenco does operate in New Mexico, but it's a UK-owned company. And we only have one small conversion facility. So it's basically a broken nuclear fuel supply chain, with the exception of fuel fabrication in the United States, but it's 20% of our electricity grid, 19 to 20%. So Trump said, hey, this is a problem. Let's look into it. Did the Nuclear Fuels Working Group. That went 2019 into 2020. And then I don't know if you remember during 2020, Trevor, you probably have already forgotten at this point, but COVID and riots and a presidential election. So Trump had bigger fish to fry. That there just was got totally left on the back burner.
There was everything in 2020. It all came.
Everything all at once. So that kind of just passed, and it sort of was on the back burner. Then the Biden admin, Department of Energy, has been extremely pro-nuclear, to the point where earlier this year, they started to kind of re-implement this idea of a domestic stockpile of uranium and actually buying uranium. So there actually was an RFP that got, I think, three or four awards coming from the DOE from having to buy domestic mined uranium. And that was supporting three different companies. Okay. Then we have the invasion of Ukraine. And regardless of how any of the utilities really felt about the situation, that was an immediate concern for supply. So they saw immediate sanctions of various sectors coming from Western countries, the United States, Canada, NATO countries, essentially, against various elements of Russia's economy. And so there's always this overlying kind of threat that somehow, some way, at some point soon, this supply could actually get interrupted. So it added this concern about security of supply. So what did the utilities do? Well, Russia is the biggest supplier of both conversion and enrichment. So they immediately, not all of them, but a lot of utilities went after conversion and enrichment and secured new contracts for conversion and enrichment from Western sources. So that's for conversion, that's ConverDyn and Orano primarily. And then for enrichment, it's Urenco and Orano operating in various countries in the West. And we saw the conversion enrichment prices go crazy last year. And of course, we were saying all along last year, this is what's going to happen to uranium. It's just going to be lagged by 6 to 12 months. Well, 6 to 12 months have passed and uranium's on fire. It's up about 75% year to date for the commodity itself. It's been a huge, huge confirming year. So that brings us to this present House Bill 1042, which is the, I don't remember the name of it verbatim, but basically the act to limit or cut off and stop Russia importing Russian uranium. And so this passed the House and it's now going on to the Senate. There have been a number of Senate majority leaders who are stating that if this national defense bill does not include funding to support both the domestic nuclear fuel cycle and also potentially to support any utilities that would be financially burdened by having to, on a short-term basis, source Western enrichment, you know, ex-Russian enrichment, because if their enrichment contracts get cut off by this act. There's also waivers within this act that if a utility cannot source that material within a certain period of time that they need it outside of Russia, that the Department of Energy would grant, or the Secretary of Energy would grant a waiver for the utility to receive their shipment based on a previous contract of that Russian material. So really, looking at this ban, it's like, okay, it's a ban on paper, but
right,
you have waivers out to 2028, potentially. And of course, those waivers are discretionary. But from what I hear, 100% of the time, the Secretary of Energy is going to grant these waivers and not put a utility in a dire situation where they might not be able to operate their facility. That's right. They're not going to turn the screws.
That gets political real quick.
Very quick. But what is interesting is that the big utilities in the U.S. and a major United States-based nuclear advocacy group late last week did express to their constituency, essentially, that, or to their following, that they support this bill. They support a yes vote on this bill. Okay, It passed the House. It's going to the Senate. Well, just today we're hearing that this national defense budget did pass. So that means that, and there is funding in it for nuclear. So what that means is highly, highly likely to pass the Senate. With all of that said, the other piece of news that hit today was an article by Ari Natter on Bloomberg stating that he is hearing from Tenex, which is the Russian supplier of enriched uranium, that Tenex is saying that Tenex is communicating with their customers in the United States, which are these large utilities, the Duke and Exelon and a bunch of others, Constellation, excuse me, that Tenex is warning them that Russia, the Federation, could in fact cut off these shipments. It wouldn't be Tenex's choice, but that they could have higher up orders saying, cut them off in response to us banning them, which is a possibility. I've always thought that that wouldn't happen because if you understand the way that the Russians have been, like, they haven't missed a single delivery ever to anyone.
Of course not. They need all the money they can get.
Right. And these individual entities, yes, they're state owned, but they're still dealing on a global basis and providing a service and a product to customers around the world. They don't want to be seen as voluntarily reneging on a contract. They're not going to do that voluntarily. But if they get the orders from Putin or whoever that it's time to cut off the US because they're effectively banning us, that is a problem. And I'm not betting on this happening. And I actually think that the odds are that it doesn't. But if it does, and this is not just my warning, this same warning is coming from UxC, Trade Tech, from the other nuclear fuel consultants. Basically, if this happens, all bets are off for the price. And we're going to see a major, major price response if that happens. Now, we're going to see a price response regardless. Yeah. But this will happen faster and probably much more violent if Russia actually does decide to cut off the US.
Okay, let's pause this right here because I want to open up conversation with you on this topic. If 10X is forced to stop supplying enriched uranium, I suppose that would be any sort of enrichment, all enriched uranium, where we have these waivers in this new bill here in the United States that would allow for the importation of low enriched if the utilities do such need it. It sounds like on the Russian side, it's all or nothing.
Exactly. Yep. And this ban, of course, so there's already a number. I don't think anything is coming from Russia right now to the United States besides nuclear materials.
Well, like not directly. I mean, the traders are probably finding some way to move some metals around, but yeah.
Well, that's an interesting point, Trevor, because this commodity is actually quite unique. There is a chain of custody across the fuel cycle. So it's very different from, let's say, a barrel of oil. The origin source of uranium or enriched uranium, like any way along the fuel cycle chain, that essentially gets branded with the source of that service and product. So it's like traders are not necessarily buying enrichment uranium from Russia and selling it to the United States. That's not happening. And that is absolutely monitored by the United States under the current Russian suspension agreement, which limits the amount of Russian material that the United States can receive on an annual basis to something like 24-25%. So there aren't really workarounds in this particular case, which is quite curious. But yes, effectively, your point is taken. This ban would say, we don't want to take this material anymore. We don't want to support Russia for these reasons. And all of this is actually even on the table now because the United States is actually supporting the nuclear fuel cycle. And why do the waivers go to 2028? Well, because the United States believes that there will be sufficient support of the fuel cycle between now and that time where we won't be self-sufficient, but we'll be able to source from domestic Canada, Australia, Namibia, rather than Russia and be able to be secure in that supply without relying on Russia.
Is that good enough, Justin? I mean, my follow-up question is like, well, if we don't get enriched uranium from Russia, where do we come from? Where do we get it from? I mean, a lot of the places you just laid out don't seem to make it easier, nor is it as large a supply as what Russia's providing.
Well, the enrichment itself is really the biggest problem because we do have domestic conversion. And yes, the conversion market is tighter than the enrichment market, but enrichment, we have no domestic enrichment. Okay, Centris exists, but it's a very small, there's not a lot of SWU. And it's essentially, I believe their centrifuges are even owned by the federal government. And Urenco, like I said, does have a facility in New Mexico. But they are UK owned. But either way, it's an ally, right? So Urenco has actually announced expanding their enrichment capacity in New Mexico and in the Netherlands. So they're working on expanding enrichment. Orano has talked about it. I don't recall if they officially announced they were expanding enrichment. They might have. I apologize. I'm forgetting that off the top of my head. But I know it's top of mind. And then Cover9 is also considering expanding conversion. If they get sufficient long-term contracts, high enough prices, they'll do it. They're also looking at Springfields in the UK, which is owned by Westinghouse. It's an idled or a shut down conversion facility that is actually having federal funding from the UK government to look into what it would take to get it back online. So is that all enough to not need Russian enrichment? I believe it is. Part of the problem is just the near-term concerns for deliveries on contracts that were signed years ago. So considering there's this lag time and the fuel cycle takes a while, we know also that some utilities in the West have secured enrichment all the way through the 2030s and into the 2040s at this point. So they're thinking way ahead. And with time and funding, we'll get there in terms of domestic and allied relied upon sources of enrichment.
Okay. This is obviously, we're going to be following this story. I think when you and I reconvene in the new year, we should have a little bit more clarity, at least on this bill as it does head to the Senate. I don't know if it gets voted on before the Christmas break or not, Justin. We'll have to wait and see, but there's a lot of dynamics to this headline here. There's another headline out, and talking about geopolitics, the COP28 came out as well at the end of November, and the group of countries did announce that a plan to triple nuclear capacity globally by 2050, and obviously the United States, their contribution is also involved in this deal that would increase the United States domestic nuclear fuel supply by 200 to 300%. Listen, I'm the first one that will call a spade, and sometimes headlines are nothing more than just talking points. It takes action here. What are your kind of inclinations to see if this headline is actually actionable by the U.S. government in the years to come?
Well, I share your skepticism, Trevor. A little less conversation, a little more action, right?
Yeah.
My understanding with this pledge is basically that there's no real actionable commitments within this pledge. It's basically saying we support doing this and we support it collectively. But there was no part of it that said, okay, the United States, in order for the world to triple, theoretically, well, I guess the United States wouldn't necessarily triple, but as the largest nuclear market, I suppose it would make sense as a leader to do so. So I'm not holding my breath. With all of that said, it would be a major, major, major technical challenge to accomplish that. The fuel cycle expansion alone, I mean, there's huge difficulties in every sector, but in particular in the uranium mining sector, in the nuclear sector, for like a shortage of skilled labor. I mean, and that's going to, in the near term, impact supply response, which is going to be positive for the price environment. But looking at the expansion of nuclear, a tripling is a major challenge. Now, of course, right. Can humanity do it? Sure. We went from zero to what we have now, and largely in three decades, you know, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, is when most of the globe's nuclear fleet was built out. Then the Japanese built some a little bit later, the Chinese built some later. And a few other exceptions, but that was the bulk of the fleet was built in this three decades. And if we had that type of tenacity going after the expansion of nuclear in the nuclear fuel cycle, it's possible. My biggest takeaway from this proclamation, and it is mainly kind of sentiment based, and just seeing that for this to be a major headline at COP28, it really, I think, gives permission to the environmental left to accept nuclear into your open arms. it's never made sense to me and shouldn't make sense to anybody for those most concerned about carbon dioxide to actually be against the only clean source of baseload power. I mean, with an exception, I guess you could call hydroelectricity clean in terms of carbon, but it's not clean environmentally, if you ask me. So to see nuclear finally getting its day in the sun and having this this proclamation at COP28 is a major win for nuclear energy, and hopefully we'll see that momentum continue.
Okay. I do want to, before we let you go, Justin, I want to ask you about the uranium equities. You've been following this very closely with your newsletter subscribers all year. If you're in resources or investing in resources and not in uranium, chances are you didn't see a whole lot of gains. If you were in uranium, you were blessing your lucky stars. You were, because that was about the only thing in the resources equities that actually had positive momentum this year. A lot of these equities, you know, I'm following a lot of charts, have either moved up pretty dang quickly, but, you know, like exponentially high. And you and I both know when charts tend to do that, there's a come to Jesus moment where they come down and correct. However, the fundamentals remain strong for uranium and nuclear energy, Justin. I mean, without kind of spilling the beans that you like to share with your subscribers, how are you communicating and wading the waters here on uranium equities?
Here, it's a good point. They've had a good run. URA, for example, is up almost 50% for the year. It's up about 35% over the last 3 months. It's been a very, very strong sector for the last quarter and a half, really, going into the new year. So I think the last couple of weeks of December are usually pretty quiet for uranium equities and for the uranium market. And that's probably the reason why, because the uranium fuels market is typically quiet. This is obviously a little bit different now with this Russian ban situation that we just discussed. So it's very hard to tell what we're looking at for the next couple of weeks. Honestly, I would not be surprised to see a bit of consolidation. There's going to be a little bit of selling pressure coming from the ETFs offering dividends over the past couple of weeks of the year. But man, we're pretty bulled up for 2024, Trevor. It's just the supply is a problem. It's a major problem. We're seeing very, very low volume trading in the spot market cause meaningful increases in the price. There's so much detail and nuance here. And we're going to go into that pretty deep. Next week, we have our members webinar that we're bringing on somebody with, you know, multiple decades in the space that works in the nuclear fuels market to go way into this stuff. And I know we don't have time today, but supply is broken. It's broken. It's so thin for a couple of major reasons. One, Sprott's buying over the past 2 years has significantly tightened the midterm, especially when we had these backwardated periods of time in the autumn of 21, the spring of 22, where the spot price went way above the term price. There was still a little bit of supply in the midterm. And so you had carry traders selling into spot, buying midterm contracts. So producers were signing into those contracts, and that soaked up some midterm supply. Then you have a major price move across the sector, which is causing utilities with legacy contracts to flex up those contracts. This was a nice little bonus that was put into these contracts by sellers when it was a buyer's market just 2, 3, 4 years ago. So these utilities are flexing up their deliveries. So they're taking deliveries now in 2024, 2025 for contracts they signed 2, 3, 4 years ago. And they're executing that option to flex up because we're sitting here at $85 uranium and those contracts were signed at $35 to $45. So part of those contracts is fixed. And if you can flex up 20% at fixed $40 a pound, you're going to do it hand over fist. And all of them are doing it. And all of the producers are constrained in their supply right now for the next few years. What that means is we're going to have situations in the next 12 to 24 months, and probably already happening right now, where a utility flexes up, the producer doesn't have that inventory sitting in the can, they go have to buy it in the spot market. And that means more competition in the spot market where there's no supply anyways, with traders and, God forbid, financial entities come in with any sort of fervor in the next 12 months. It's just going to break the market. It's a major supply shortfall. It's a seller's market 100%. And we're here we are at the end of the year. Replacement rate contracting has been achieved. Year one of a contracting cycle. Man, I think it's going to get kind of crazy.
Well, it's going to be a fun year to follow this market once again, Justin. We're going to try to, you know, keep it, you know, more frequent in 2024. I know we've kind of been on off and on in 2023, you know, testing the waters here on going nuclear, but it's going to be a fun year, and not just uranium energy, but like in all of the commodities. I think as everything's set up really nicely,
So. I think so too. Yeah, I'm pretty pleased with how we're set up for this across uranium and precious metals and some various other things. It's so yeah. Congrats to you as well with Mining Stock Daily. I think you've put in your paces, sir, and I think we're on the cusp of a nice move for the metals too. So I'm on board for that as well.
All right. We will talk again probably next month, Justin. Have yourself a Merry Christmas, season's greetings, and Happy New Year, all those things. And thanks so much for everything you do, not only for us on the podcast, but for your subscribers. You've set some people up. You've made some nice gains for people. So kudos, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much, Trevor. And same back to you. Best holidays to you and your family. I hope all goes well for you.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to Going Nuclear. That's a wrap here on our first year. We'll be back next year in 2024 with more following the nuclear energy market. Happy New Year, everybody. Be well. The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Going Nuclear, Justin, or myself, and the Clear Commodity Network team and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.